Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. My name is David Nicholas Somlo, a.k.a. Alexander Asher David Ben Shlomo, and you are listening to DIY Me Mind Presents. Today, as promised in a previous episode, I'm going on a long ramble and doing installment number two of the Asher Essays, everybody, where I talk about loosely related things, and I leave it up to the viewer to turn it into something coherent in their minds. Today we're talking about how basically our beliefs inform what we see in the world around us. So our beliefs about the world, how they actually become true. And this is different to manifesting our own destiny, which I am skeptical about when people say that I manifested a positive outcome. No, you took the necessary steps and were prepared for the opportunities that were presented to you. That's what happened to you. But anyway, I digress. I have a little bit of an outline here. Let me refer to that. But today's essay was mostly inspired by a friend who was depressed and insisted I wasn't listening to them when I didn't see the world as depressing as they did. And I didn't think their life was as hopeless, and I didn't think they should be as bitter as they were. And so I wasn't even offering counterpoints. All I was doing was not being as sad as she was. And not, I was offering sympathy, but you could tell in my voice that it wasn't bringing me down. Why this person wanted me to feel down, to validate their own beliefs, I didn't like it one bit. And I didn't have the words then to convince them that they have an incomplete view of reality if they're wallowing in one feeling. This goes for manic people too, and especially for bipolar people who seem two-faced to outsiders. This episode is for you guys. Now, I studied psychology, abnormal psychology, for 2 years, and psychology in general for about 15 of my life, and I'm in my 40s now. So take that as you will. At this point, I might have some wisdom. So again, let me pause here to refer to my outline. So again, to recap, before I get into it, this is about how our beliefs about the world inform what we actually see happen around us. This is for mostly depressed people who are going through something and can't seem to shake it. How you are letting a one-sided perspective take over for the rest of reality. If that makes sense. It hopefully will after the rest of this. So what is the truth, really? When we talk about the truth, what are we talking about? And throughout this essay, this verbal essay, I want you guys to have an image of a glass half full of water, but I want the image to be inverted. So it could not possibly be that the air is in the bottom half and the water is in the top half. Or you can just imagine a regular half full, half empty, also glass of water. That represents reality. If you can see both halves of the glass, and you can understand that it is both empty and full at the same time, you have a complete grasp of the truth. Now, what are we constantly told? That some people see it as half full, some people see it as half empty. You're never told that both are true, and what is true of the situation is that you have enough water. You could have more, but you also could have none, which is a negative that would outweigh the positive. Now, if you feel like your life is such that your glass is all the way empty, then I am sorry, but at least you have a glass. I hate to say it. If you don't have a glass, if you want to keep one-upping me, you're just one-siding the situation. I guess I just coined a phrase, because I don't know how else to say it, that, yes, I do. What am I talking about? You're letting one perspective take the reins. And that's not true. You have a glass, and it's half full, because you're alive, and you're surviving. If you die tomorrow, then you'll be out of your misery. If you're dying, at least you're not dead. But this essay is for people who listen to podcasts, so your glass is half full, and it's half empty, because you live a balanced life, a normal life, and if you're wallowing in a feeling, and you're manic, or you're depressed, you're again out of touch with reality. No, you're not more accurate. Some people say depressed people are more accurate. They are more accurate in one respect, that they judge their own skill level more accurately. Research has shown in some activities than other people. That is not a reason to knock down everybody who comes at you with a silver lining, with something to be grateful for, or with another take that doesn't say everything is crap. And folks, I'm going off of my memory now of my outline, and I still haven't looked at my outline, so let me do that. Okay, so I was supposed to talk about the truth, define the truth, and the truth is an accurate view of what's out there, accepting what is there, not what feels correct, but all the vantage points together combine to an approximation of the truth. The problem comes in because different people see different things. And they have trouble accepting the other perspectives as also true. They're all true. There's an emphasis in religious traditions on seeing beyond what is called the subjective to the objective. But the objective can only be approximated by a bunch of the subjective. If that makes sense. I think it does. And here I'm going to read from my outline, starting in the middle of a sentence. The difference in how our pairs of eyes perceive reality, and the similarity of which is taken to be the actual truth. Some say you can never actually get there. I say you can never actually get there. But you can know it because others before us have touched into reality. And some religious figures, in mythology at least, in scripture, have been known to be more in touch with, quote-unquote, the truth. The point of a debate, so I'm told, so I assume, and I'm not talking about a presidential debate, I'm talking about debate club debates. I think they amount to two people or two teams picking opposite sides of an argument or of an idea, making their case and then debating each other. So they each have a truth if they're not lying. Now, lying is presenting a partial vision of the truth by my new definition that I just came up with. Because if the truth is seeing everything, then seeing nothing or seeing one of the truths is a lie. So as long as either side doesn't just manufacture facts that fit their narrative, they're following the rules of the debate, right? If they're getting their facts straight. Also, some religious traditions say that we cannot access, we can't even approximate the objective truth like the religious leaders can. Also, on a side note, they say that if you don't stand for anything or believe in anything, you'll fall for anything. That might be true, but then the reverse case, it's probably also true that if you believe in everything, if you see the merit in everybody's perspective, then you won't fall for anything because you see what everybody's doing in their one-sided takes, with their one-sided takes. So in a debate, each side has their truth, and what they're trying to do is present it in the more eloquent, the most convincing way. There can only be one winner. And that's the interesting thing. Only one can win the argument, and it has nothing to do with being justified or being correct or in the right. Being in the right and being right are also two different things, but that's another story. It doesn't necessarily have to do with them being either in the right or right, or the other person or other side being wrong. Well, let me give you an example. You complain to somebody about something they're doing that's bothering you. You're in the right because it bothers you, and they can't take that away from you, although that's a whole other issue, whether you should say, maybe I shouldn't be bothered by this in the first place, and maybe it's me. See, the whole point of this essay is that you need to question your own beliefs. Your beliefs have to be malleable. Your beliefs about the world have to be malleable in order for you to accept changing realities, because reality changes on you. And you're not going to be healthy, and you're not going to be able to adapt if you can't question your own truth about the world. So that someone says, okay, this thing that I do bothers you, but what about when you did this other thing? Now, that is usually enough to back me down, because I don't want to be a hypocrite. But let's focus on that other person. They're sidetracking the argument. That's not what you came into the conversation to talk about in the first place. Are they going to win the argument with you with that one little move? Probably. Did they actually fix the problem? Did they actually change their own behavior so as not to upset you? No. They won the argument, but you were in the right, and you were right to bring it up, and nothing will change for the better. Depressed people are really good at this, knocking down any argument to their own perspective, their own way of being. Manic people are pretty good at ignoring the evidence that they're out of touch. Hey, schizophrenic people sometimes will ignore evidence that their perspective is not doing them any favors of being persecuted by society, and everybody's recording you and stuff like that. In this day and age, it's a surprise any schizophrenic learns to cope. But that's another story. The point of the example of the person sidetracking the conversation is that they're just more convincing. They presented their perspective, and you can say, well, David, that sounds awfully personal, but have you never experienced this? being backed down by somebody who just distracts from your point. And the history books go down showing that they won that argument. But anyway, let's turn to a new topic, says my outline, of optimism and pessimism. Or as I like to think of it, manic or depressive. When people can't snap out of their optimism or pessimism, and they read every situation as going well or going not so well, or the one thing that they're sad about tarnishes everything around them. The evidence that I've seen is that most people are both, and they read the situation in front of them correctly, and depending on the situation, this is either going to end well or not. This meeting the situation in front of us, wherever that situation is, that's the key. But actually, while we're on the topic of personal things, when someone's not rude to you, even though they want to be because they're bitter at the world, let's say, that's one reason someone constantly thinks of the negative thing to say because they don't like themselves and therefore are bitter at people. Is being nice a lie when your first instinct is to say something mean? No. And here's why. First of all, it'll come through eventually that you're bitter. So there's that. Secondly, it's a fake it till you make it situation. If you're nice, people will reflect niceness back to you. And that might be insincere too. But doesn't it feel good to be nice at? So that might thaw your heart out a little. And eventually, the thoughts will turn positive if you act positive enough. It'll be more reflexive to think the nice things. You know what nice is. Consider yourself lucky you still know. Be that way, because it's not a lie. Or it's a lie for the moment, but it's a survival skill. More than that. If it's about survival, you can ignore one side of your perspective, the negative. But it's not really a lie to you, because you have the negative and the positive in you. Now, I have a friend who just lost a loved one. Now, he doesn't need me to help make him feel better. He just needs me to check in, which I do regularly. And I'm doing my job as a friend, I think. And yes, it's an obligation. Yes, it's what friends do. And me calling it a job means that you have to be mindful of it. Not that it's, oh, here we go again, back to work. Although it is hard for some people to muster what they need to be an empathic human being. And my heart goes out to those people, because I am those people sometimes. But I was thinking, what can he do? What can he do to feel better besides wait and let the wound slowly heal over time? Because he has to accept the situation. Otherwise, he's going to throw his life away, wallowing in sorrow. I've thrown my life away, wallowing in my perspective, before. So trust me, it can happen. It can happen to the best of us. And I was the best of us until I wasn't. I have both in me. We all have the duality in us. And the manifestors, the manifest destiny people, have that right. That if you don't believe it can happen, then it's never going to happen. That doesn't mean bad things can't happen to you if you never imagine them. Anyway, what can he do? He can focus on what he has, what there is to be grateful for. Okay, that's BS, let's say. He can realize that his grief means that while his loved one was alive, he made many positive memories. Because the grief you feel is directly proportionate to the good times you had. How much you miss somebody is directly proportionate to how much you enjoyed their company while they were alive. Okay, you don't like that one. How about thank goodness and what miracles had to happen before I could be a sentient human being able to experience this grief? And don't spit in the face of that, because then you're spitting in the face of people who can no longer enjoy being a sentient human being. And it sounds weird to say enjoy the pain, but don't enjoy the pain. You're not enjoying the pain. You're enjoying the fact that you can do things such as feel pain. Because that's part of the miracle of being alive. Okay, that one's a stretch. You don't like that one. How about, and see, we're just going through all the perspectives until it seems ridiculous to only think that life is shit because I lost this person. They're not suffering anymore. There's that. You have comparison against other people. These are all basically silver linings. Your silver linings playbook. That's what we go through. And then there's just plain old acceptance of the situation. You would be delusional to think you can change it. So, we have all these, what people like to call tools, but they're perspectives on the same situation, and they're all true. Everything is true. You're still imagining that glass, I hope. What's true of the image? Everything. There's a glass, there's air, there's water. That's all of reality. Now, what does this do for me who just went through a breakup and is coming to accept that maybe he will be alone romantically on his deathbed, which, as we've discussed, might be in about 6 years? Once we hit 6 years, I'll stop counting. But remember, a research article from the 90s said the average is 47, and I'm 41. So, what does it do for me? Well, first of all, it wins the argument I have with all my depressed friends. You have no right to be depressed all the time and think that everything is wrong with the world when everything is not wrong with the world. And you shouldn't feel guilty for other people's problems to the point where it becomes your problem, because then you're just using them to fill a hole. Wow, I got off topic there a little, but anyway, what does it do for the incel population? Know that right now you can say you want to be alone. You want to be alone until you become such a person that is attractive to the type of person that you want to be with. Say that. Say, I'm celibate for now, on purpose, because I'm accepting the situation. And until a relationship is not about sex, and I realize what that is. I'm talking to the incel population now, not to me. To me, I say, okay, I'm better off alone. The world needs people like me. Yes, it sucks. Yes, my situation sucks. No, I will most likely not be able to find a mate, especially if I refer to them as mates. Although, wouldn't it be nice to find a like-minded person that knows exactly why I'm referring to people as we refer to animals? Because we are a special category of animal. And it's actually most accurate to refer to us as mates because evolutionary pressures still push down on us and form us and inform us. So, anyway, for me, not the incel, I've already realized that the point of a relationship is to find a partner to help get through this life. And if they just depress you and win every argument, then maybe they're not the one for you, says every divorced person ever, which I am not. But you come to accept it because otherwise you'd be delusional and you don't want to be that anymore, David said to himself. Anyway, I'm doing well today. I only needed a little help eating. I didn't need any help going to the bathroom. My caregiver's on vacation for the next 2 days. It is Christmas Eve Eve. And I bid you adieu. Love you. Go check me out at Radix Revive on all music streaming platforms. All six songs are the proudest songs I've recorded with the help of a buddy. The proudest songs I've recorded. They themselves are proud, and I am proud of them. Yep. Love you all. Thank you for listening. Toodles. Wait, so I should probably conclude. I have 45 seconds until it's been 30 minutes of rambling. So you get that questioning your singular perspective is the way to a well-balanced mental life. That's what I meant by your beliefs make reality. If you strongly believe a certain way that the world is crap, the world is going to be crap. If you question that belief and live a more mentally balanced life, you will be better off. And that's that. Thank you. Love you. Goodbye.